Qatar rescued us. That's what one of the heads of the Libyan opposition said this week when asked how the rebels have financed their fight against the Gaddafi regime. Qatar is the tiny Arab emirate that's been playing a major role in the democratic rebellions across the Middle East. It's only about a third bigger than Delaware, and it has fewer than 2 million people. But in many ways, it's proving more critical in the region than its heavyweight neighbors like Saudi Arabia. Qatar has openly helped the Libyan rebels, and it's helped mediate disputes in Yemen and Lebanon. It owns the increasingly influential Arab news channel Al Jazeera, which is housed in its capital city of Doha. And Qatar is home to key American military bases, including the U.S. Forward Command in charge of the war in Iraq. So today we're looking at what we've come to think of as the Doha effect, meaning the big role this small country is playing in the events in the Middle East. With us is Lawrence Pintack, Dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. He joins us from Northwest Public Radio in Pullman, Washington. Lawrence, give us an overview of how Qatar has been helping the Libyan rebels.
They jumped in right from the beginning. They provided 6 jets for the no-fly zone. They started helping the rebels sell Libyan oil to support the rebellion. They created a base for the rebels in Doha, a political base, and even set up a TV station for them.
This is Libya TV.
Libya TV, based in Doha, Qatar.
The New York Times is also reporting that hundreds of Libyan rebels took part in a secret military training inside Qatar, possibly coordinated with NATO. So Qatar seems to be involved in a variety of ways in what's going on over there.
Yeah, they've been a key support for the rebels. They stepped in from the beginning, no holds barred. They were the first to step in and recognize the rebels as the legitimate government of Libya, and they've kept putting their money where their mouth is.
So what motivates Qatar's involvement?
Qatar wants to be and is becoming a player in the Arab world. The emir of Qatar staged a bloodless coup, overthrew his father back in 1995, and he immediately set out to transform the country both internally and as a player in the region. Qatar is this tiny little thumb of sand that sticks off the Saudi Peninsula, but he has turned it into a political powerhouse, equivalent, rivaling Saudi influence in the region.
What are the ways Qatar benefits by backing the Libyan rebels?
Well, it can benefit economically in terms of helping with the oil fields and getting a piece of that oil. But in a grander sense, it continues to build this image that all roads lead to Doha, this image that they are the key player in the Arab world. If you look at what's happened in the last 6 months, Saudi Arabia lost a lot of influence by backing the wrong horse in Egypt. They put pressure on the Americans to support Mubarak. The Americans didn't buy it. And the Saudis were looking like they had egg on their face. Meanwhile, Qatar is overtly pushing for the change in Egypt and now leading the pack, leading the charge on Libya. And it just drives home this idea that they have become the power. Anywhere you look in the Arab world today, there is a Qatari foothold.
Could part of Qatar's desire to get involved in the way you just described be based on its geography, meaning the neighbors that surround it and it having to be very careful as a result?
Well, in part, but if all you're looking to do is be careful, you're going to play a low profile and kiss up to everyone around you. And again, if you think about geographically, they have the Saudis on one side and the Iranians on the other. They get on with both of them, but they are also flexing their political muscles to put themselves in a position where it's harder for those neighbors to challenge them. And if you rewind back to 1995 when the emir took over, what was the first thing he did after he took over, or one of the first? It was to create Al Jazeera a year later, which was the first cross-border satellite channel that was largely independent. And he gave them a mandate to go out and shake up the region, go out and talk about all the things that Arab leaders don't want discussed. And that immediately threw other Arab leaders off balance, and it immediately gave him huge leverage against the Saudis. Then, not long after that, he had the Americans shift the U.S. military central command from Saudi Arabia to Qatar. So it was from Qatar that we ran the invasion of Iraq, even as right up the road, Al Jazeera was reporting a very negative view of that invasion. So it put Qatar in a unique position.
That's Lawrence Pintack, Dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. He's been explaining how the tiny Arab Gulf state of Qatar is becoming a key player in the Middle East. More on that just ahead, back in a minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation about Qatar, the tiny Arab Gulf state that's becoming a key player in the Middle East. With us is veteran Middle East reporter Lawrence Pintack. He's also founding dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. And he's been telling us that when it comes to the Arab region today, all roads lead to Doha, the capital of Qatar, which is also home to the news organization Al Jazeera. Lawrence, let's do a little 101 on Qatar. It's ruled by an emir who, as you said earlier, took over from his father in a bloodless coup. Qatar is rich today, but that was not the case until relatively recently.
Absolutely. The emir's father had literally been raised in the Bedouin tents, and he had that kind of mindset, which is why the son overthrew him. And he said, we're going to make this a modern society. Today, they are the world's largest exporter of natural gas. They have one of the highest per capita incomes in the world. And the irony is that the Qataris themselves are a minority in their own country, because they have so much money, they have so many foreign workers.
Because these are jobs Qataris don't want to do themselves, or there's so much work that the Qataris themselves, there aren't enough of them to do it?
Well, a little of each. You have a country that is now somewhere around 2.5 million people. Depending on who you believe, there are somewhere between 300,000 and 600,000 actual Qataris. The rest are foreigners who are running the banks and the oil industry and gas industry, down to the Bangladeshi street sweepers.
What is the U.S. government's relationship with Qatar?
The U.S. has a very close relationship with Qatar. The fact that U.S. Central Command is based in Qatar, we have a huge airfield in Qatar, is reflective of that. The U.S. largely pulled out of Saudi Arabia a few years ago, ultimately because of the pressure from Osama bin Laden. That was a key demand he had, that the U.S. got out of Saudi Arabia.
Lawrence Pintack, we've been talking about the ways that Qatar has been supporting the Libyan rebels in this uprising. On the other hand, Qatar joined Saudi Arabia in sending in troops to Bahrain to put down the democratic movement in Bahrain. Why would Qatar take one approach in one revolution and a different approach in another?
Qatari foreign policy, and domestic policy for that matter, is if nothing, full of contradictions. Support the Libyan rebels, send troops to Bahrain to put down the rebels there. They have ties with Israel, but they support Hamas. It's a Sunni country sharing gas fields with Shiite Iran. The list goes on. They are pragmatic. The emir believes in hedging his bets.
Despite its big role in the Arab Spring, Qatar itself is not a democracy. Could you outline for us how the rule works over there?
It's an emirate. It is the equivalent of a king. There is a parliamentary building, but there is no parliament. It is ruled with a degree of consensus. He needs to keep the other tribes happy, the other leaders happy. But at the end of the day, he calls the shots.
You mentioned that a majority of residents in Qatar are foreigners coming in to do jobs. What are conditions like for those foreign workers in Qatar?
Well, it depends on what the color of your skin is and what your passport looks like. If you're the managing director of Citibank or running an oil field, your life is pretty good. If you're a Bangladeshi street sweeper, it is not the most conducive situation. Are foreign workers exploited? Well, you look at anywhere in the Arab world and the workers who are brought in to build all those shiny skyscrapers live in pretty miserable conditions. They don't have much freedom. If they get out of line, they're immediately sent home. No such thing as unions or strikes. And you're out there building skyscrapers or sweeping the streets in 120-degree temperatures.
We've mentioned that Al Jazeera News is based in Qatar, in the capital of Doha. As you've said, it's freer, but not entirely free. Give us a sense of how censored or not censored the media is in Qatar.
Every Arab news organization has what they call red lines, areas that they cannot cover. Al Jazeera's red lines are arguably the loosest in the Arab world, but they still exist. So their red lines involve Qatari foreign policy, if it's going to reflect negatively or hurt Qatari foreign policy, and certainly Qatari domestic policy. You see very little reported on Al Jazeera about what goes on inside Qatar. Not that there's a complete ban, but it's handled with kid gloves. While, back to these contradictions, at the same time, the local press is heavily censored, heavily controlled. I'll give you one concrete example. Jazeera always took great joy in needling the Saudis, in reporting negatively about Saudi Arabia, and as a result, we're not allowed to operate within Saudi Arabia. And that needling of Saudi was a reflection of Qatari foreign policy in jostling against Saudi influence. A couple of years ago, with the rise of Iran after the Iraq War and the perceived Sunni-Shia Cold War, suddenly word came down to the Al Jazeera newsroom that take it easy on Saudi Arabia. And you saw a distinct change in Al Jazeera's coverage of Saudi Arabia.
I think many Americans don't know much about Qatar, struggle to pronounce Qatar, maybe are even less likely to have heard of Doha. In what ways do you think the average U.S. citizen would be remiss in not putting Qatar more on his or her radar?
Oh, I wouldn't presume to suggest that the average American needs to understand, the internal politics of the Arab world. I think it's just important to realize that Qatar is a growing power. You're going to hear a lot more of it with Asian Games and Olympics and World Cup and all of those sorts of things. And if you pay attention to politics in the Middle East, you're going to hear that name more and more.
Lawrence Pintek is dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. He's also author of The New Arab Journalist, Mission and Identity in a Time of Turmoil. Lawrence Pintek, thank you.
Thank you.
This note as Hurricane Irene nears the eastern seaboard. Amtrak has announced that it is canceling most trains south of Washington, D.C. for the weekend. No word yet on possible cancellations along the Northeast Corridor. Mandatory evacuations are underway in New Jersey's Cape May County, and toll collection will be suspended along the toll roads to make evacuation more efficient. Also, casinos in Atlantic City are closing this afternoon. State campgrounds in Connecticut are closing too. The state says it will give full refunds to anyone who has booked a site. And New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has told several hospitals in low-lying parts of the city that they have to move patients out by tonight. News is next. This is Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com. And the Institute of Contemporary Art on the Boston waterfront. Discover the power and beauty of new art and ideas, icaboston.org.